Pero la razón.
Well, we were going to have an election this morning, now that we're about to begin the next cycle. But I checked with Chairman Wallace, and he decided to have a vote of one. So for a little while, just for 3 days, what I'd like to do is for the morning sessions to let them be unguided. These are the first three phases of mindfulness breathing, beginning, of course, today with the infirmary. Infirmary generally is optimal to be in the supine position, but it can be done, of course, in the sitting position. We're still waiting for Sandra to get hooked up this out. So, emphasis on relaxation. We are now entering with just 3 weeks, what does that make it? Entering the fifth week or something like that of this retreat. Entering the sixth week, six, seven, eight, yeah. Entering the 6 week, so we're definitely coming around the back stretch here for our 8 week expedition. And as I've mentioned a number of times, my really core aspiration for you, my hope, aspiration, is that when you leave here, you will do so with confidence that in at least one, if not all of the practices. And part of that is being able to guide yourself through all of the meditations and not being relying on the trainer wheels of the recordings of guided meditations. So in the straight mindfulness of breathing, or all of the shamatha practices, of course, it entails a quieting of mind. So in a way, there's just one thing to do, maintain just that ongoing continuity of non-discursive awareness. It's a bit more complex when we go into the four measurables, while we're trying to maintain the continuity of mindfulness, but bringing in discursive thoughts, shifting topics, and so forth and so on. I know it's more of a challenge. But for the time being, we'll focus on shamatha, and continuing in these morning sessions, and on relaxation. When you do leave here to wherever you're going, I think the infirmary and the full body awareness will be one of your best friends for restoring the equilibrium, soothing and calming your whole nervous system or prana system, and establishing a true contemplative foundation for the development of attention skills rather than the ordinary foundation, which is just sheer effort and trying to apply skillful means, but with sheer effort with no relaxation. So the cultivation of relaxation is an immediate antidote to the mind becoming overcome by either craving or hostility. And that is, I invite you to investigate your own experience, but as soon as we get caught up in craving or attachment, there is a clenching, there is a contraction, a tightening up, a smalling down of the mind as it rivets in on and focuses, fixates on whatever the object is, and that's not relaxing. And so as soon as we're setting out on this cruise of craving and attachment, then of course all we need to do is encounter an obstacle, and then the flip side of a craving and attachment comes up, and that's hostility and anger. And so both of these entail a loss of the sense of ease, relaxation, looseness. We all know what it's like. When we say a person is very angry, we say he's really uptight. Uptight. Very good word. Uptight. And not down loose. Right? And when I get you down to the infirmary, that's about as down loose as it gets. You can't go any further down. You've collapsed like a corpse, right? And you better be loose, otherwise you're not doing the practice. And so just cultivating this initial phase of shamatha is an immediate antidote, not to get to the core, but at least to prevent the mind becoming dominated by either craving or hostility. Because wherever there's hostility, there's always craving. So all such excitation of the mind, the turbulence of the mind, it's called in Tibetan gupa, which I'm translating as excitation. And by definition, when the mind is dominated by excitation, there is always craving or attachment involved. If there's no craving and attachment involved, it's not called excitation. Now, can the mind be disturbed? Can we lose track? Can we become distracted even when the mind is not dominated by either craving or hostility? And the answer is yes. Someone just recently mentioned to me in a one-on-one meeting that almost all the distractions coming up were virtuous. They are very wholesome, really, you know, wonderful things that one might do in the future. Very, very nice. That we call, if there's no attachment involved, it's simply very wholesome thoughts, benevolent thoughts arising, but they are, in fact, off target because you're seeking to practice shamatha. Then in the Buddhist tradition, we don't call that excitation. We call it another word, toa. Toa, which literally means dispersion. And that is, you were focused on the breath, and then, like a flock of pigeons just let out of its out of the cage, suddenly there's a dispersion. The mind is carried away. It flies off, right? So toa, you can call it very literally dispersion. I generally just call it agitation. But we can be agitated by virtuous thoughts as we can be more malignantly by, or more toxically by, afflictive thoughts, right? But it's still off target. It's not shamatha. So what's up with that? And the mind still gets distracted, not because the mind is free of mental afflictions, even though temporarily it's not dominated by attachment or hostility, but rather you might check to see when the mind is carried off target, carried away with this dispersion or agitation, that there still is a mental affliction involved, not explicitly craving or hostility, but the delusional revocation of I am. That I want to do this, and I'd like to do this, and I hope this happens, and maybe this can happen, I hope this, I can, and it's all based upon this dualistic grasping, which can be benevolent. It can be virtuous. So virtue can be still conditioned by, filtered by, configured by self-grasping and the reification of phenomena all at large. And all such virtue is called tainted virtue. It's virtue. It leads to fortunate rebirth. It's good. It's benevolent. It can be philanthropic. It can be all kinds of good things. And yet, it's still tainted by mental affliction. And that is the grasping of I am in this radical bifurcation of self, subject and object, self and other. So it's virtuous, but it's tainted virtue, right? So the strategy to go to untainted virtue is called shamatha and vipassana. And we're starting out with shamatha. So what I would suggest now, we're going to go right into the meditation, is that you have it self-guided. You remember the steps, because I've told them now dozens of times, of settling the body, speech, and mind in this natural state, full body awareness. Do it yourself, self-guided, and then introspectively monitor your practice, and if there's some aspects that are unclear, where you feel, I don't feel like I quite understand this thoroughly, I don't feel totally confident, note that during the meditation, and please raise the question this afternoon, okay? So then if we're clear on that one, then at least there's one method that you can leave with confidence, and you don't even need the guided meditations. You're guiding yourself, okay? So please find an immensely comfortable posture, the most comfortable posture possible on this hard tile floor.
Oder so.
Hang loose. See you this afternoon.